Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome, or should I say welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. I am your very temporary host, Jack Pitbrook. Your real host, Ed Mallion, has just walked through the door.
Invaded almost.
And now he's taking the microphone from me.
Hello everyone, how are we doing?
Today we're joined by Miguel Delaney. Say hello, Miguel.
Hello.
And Jonathan Liu, currently eating his lunch.
All right.
And on today's show, we're going to talk about the weekend's football, on and off the pitch, or rather... on the pitch sportingly and on the pitch in a kind of non-sporting sense, and then we're going to get previewing the Champions League action, but we'll start off at the Emirates Stadium.
Yep.
Where Miguel and I were at yesterday. Not a great game. Miguel, what did you think?
It was a bit of a strange game, and one of those where it wasn't that impressive as a spectacle, but one of those where actually both teams could feel they deserve to win almost, because I think Arsenal brilliant for the first 25. And I think the Solskjaer had been it afterwards. Once they got the goal from that spell and that strange Xhaka shot, that was where the game was won. But then United kind of switched up. Because, I mean, Emery completely outdid Solskjaer tactically from the start. But Solskjaer responded well. United were very good. And just when it looked like they were the better team, they gave away that stupid penalty. But weirdly, it was actually one of United's better performances against the big six or the top teams, and one of the ones they lost.
Is it time to start pointing out how Emery is getting really good at sort of setting up for these kind of one-off games? I mean, it's now two games against Spurs, which one he won and one he should have won, home game against Chelsea. He seems to be very good at setting up for one-off games.
He's a good tactical manager, and I think this is the whole thing with Emery as well. I mean, why he was almost such a good Europa League manager, and why the arguments maybe in his level has always been maybe that tier below the absolute top clubs, is because he's very good at reacting to what others do rather than necessarily imposing his own game in the way that is the kind of the standard for top clubs now.
And that represents a massive change from Wenger, who famously would never do anything like this.
And would
never cater for any opponents, or would never do anything beyond how he wants to approach.
Just go out and enjoy yourselves, lads.
Yeah. It's the classic. We have this joke that in press conferences, one of the worst questions that people can ask is, "Have you got any special plans?" And yet, Wenger was a manager who never had any special plans, and Emery, in contrast, is a manager who seems to have a special plan more often than not.
Yeah.
Even you know, whatever other criticisms you might have of him and how Arsenal's season is going. On this front, they are, as Johnny said, they have been doing pretty well.
Yeah. Also, one thing to say as well, I've seen this pointed out that their worst run basically coincided with that defensive injury crisis, and they've had good results naturally on either side of that. So maybe some of the criticism was,
I think, over. The defence benefited an awful lot yesterday from not having Skodjan Mustafi in it. I thought they were much stronger. Emery said afterwards that it was good that they had cool heads, which, I mean, you couldn't read that as a sort of criticism of Mustafi if you want to, but they were much more solid.
Do you think United weren't actually that bad? It was just, I thought they were pretty unlucky, kind of in the way that they were incredibly lucky on Wednesday night with the big PSG game. This was kind of one of those games where it was basically a couple of things just went against them in the moment, and that was it. The whole game swiveled on that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that online in the last few days, about whether or not United have now reverted to the mean and all the kind of good luck they've enjoyed has basically been reversed this weekend. because they weren't, like you say, they were pretty good. Solskjaer made a good change after half an hour, going to a back three system, which gave them a lot of stability. And on another day, they would have taken one of their chances. Like Lukaku, as you said, was pretty ropey in the box.
Yeah.
And on another day, they would have equalised, maybe probably from there gone on to win it. So I don't think it was like especially damning about Manchester United that they lost this game.
No. I think generally, in fact, the performance actually points to better for the longer term than some of their wins. Some of their lucky wins.
Well, I would say if you're listening and you've heard about this argument on the internet about whether or not United were good and you're curious about it, please don't read about it. It will only decrease the sum total of knowledge about football in your brain. So if you get any arguments about XG, I think on this front, particularly, best avoided.
XG, you know, very, very, very useful tool. Whose proponents, obviously, right at this moment, are
used by a lot of very useful tools.
Yeah, but right at this moment, you know, obviously, they're promoting the use of our coldly analytic analysis, or sorry, coldly analytic view football over maybe the romance or emotion involved with Solskjaer. And yet they've not responded in the most coldly analytical way to some of the mildest...
Well, this is the thing. This is why the criticism that stats and analytics kind of takes the romance and takes the fire out of the game is so off the mark. For a lot of people, this stuff really gets their juices flowing. Yeah. It really turns them on. And so, you know, looking at an XG graph or an XG table or expected assist, that's the stuff that gets them off, basically. And so... For, you know, everybody sees it. You know, everybody takes different things out of football, and for some people, you know, this is what floats their boat.
It's just a very dull debate, though, isn't it? So I'd just like to interject with some breaking news. We should have some sort of noise for breaking news, but I don't have one. Zinedine Zidane will be returning to Real Madrid tomorrow. As their new coach. Instant reaction from El Dell.
Actually, the one thing about that is, when I saw it just as we were coming in, thanks El Dell, I like that. I wonder, is one of the reasons that Dan is returning basically because Perez is willing to complete the overhaul as Zidane thought was necessary last year?
I mean, it has to be, right? The interesting thing is, it all came out 2 o'clock. I just had to dash downstairs and I saw El Chiringuito, which is a nightly, a very popular nightly show with strong links to Real Madrid. They had published it as a big exclusive on their 3 p.m. show, Jugones, and then immediately two radio stations followed it up, which made me think that this is not just it's not a shot in the dark, which the Madrid press are partial to. This is real. Solari will be sacked today, Monday, so by the time you listen to this, you're probably already aware that Solari's gone. But Zidane coming back is weird because I guess it solves the one problem, which was how on earth is he going to find another job and do well in another job? Because we kind of wondered that, you know, he'd gone in at Real Madrid, finessed an already Champions League ready squad to just go over the top and win 3 in 4 years. What was it? 4 in 5 years.
Yeah.
And now you're looking at it and it's like, okay, well, he's got a completely different job 10 months after leaving, because it's a full rebuild at Real Madrid. But he's going to be doing it with a lot of money and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how Zidane does. How do you feel about this, Johnny and Jack? Are you happy it's him, or are you disappointed? You want to see someone new up there?
One thing that it underlines to me is just how little imagination there is at Madrid. I mean, when was the last appointment?
Well, they did want, like I was told, quite very good source last week that they did. Klopp would have been the ideal because they genuinely liked the way he put smiles back on faces. And not a cliche, an actual quote. But obviously that was really a non-runner, to be honest. They're never going to get him.
Can you think of two coaches more different than Klopp and Zidane? Yeah. What's the idea?
I would have thought they'd eventually go for Allegri. I have to say, I thought that was the one that made most sense, because it feels like he's kind of running out of steam at Juventus a little bit, or that kind of there's a bit of stagnation there. And he just kind of just fits at Madrid. But
instant Premier League reaction, I have to say, this is very bad news for Chelsea. Because Zidane, for a long time, has claimed that Eden Hazard is up there with Messi and Ronaldo, and was one of the key drivers behind the pursuit of Hazard last summer, to the point where I think Hazard's admitted, doesn't he, that he went to the World Cup determined to leave Chelsea for Real Madrid. Obviously, it never happened, but I think it's going to happen this year, and it looks almost certain that it will be the burnabout for him.
Zidane was Hazard's favourite player as a boy, even though he's obviously Belgium. There were like lots of photos doing the rounds of him in the Zidane 10 France shirt from, I think, the 2002 World Cup.
Is this a short-term appointment? Is this just till the end of the season for now? Or
they're all short-term appointments at Real Madrid. I don't know. Let me just. I'm just reading one of these stories.
He's basically going to be the man to oversee the new era.
He has to be. He has to be. And so what? I mean, what
ends
you
up
do
with six European cups. Sit down.
What, I mean, what would you clap do your hands. In the new era? He's going to go out there and he's going to try and buy Neymar or try and buy. I mean, Mbappe's already said that he's not going anywhere this year, but it's a big squad which
If I was them, I wouldn't buy Neymar and I'd invest. They could get three almost equally good players for the price of Neymar.
So you'd go Eriksen,
Hazard,
and one more.
Yeah, some striker they need probably.
João Felix is the one. Him and Bruno Fernandes are probably going to be the big signings out of Portugal this summer. I'd much rather have Bruno Fernandes, I think. But this doesn't actually say how long he's going to take. It's not yet signed or completely outlined. But the wish of Zidane is to be the new Madrid coach again. As far as Radio Copa has been able to find out, Florentino Perez has promised Zidane that the club will invest a strong economic effort and will offer him a sporting project for the medium term.
Yeah, well, I mean, that squad, which has been so, you know, basically so stable for the last 5 or 6 years, really does need a bit of a revamp. I mean, if you think Bale's coming up to 30, he's going to be 30 this year.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
You know, Marcelo, by all accounts, has had a really, really awful season. Ramos will need replacing in the next 2 or 3 years. Kroos will need replacing in the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, this is a team that's probably like a couple of years at least past its peak. It needs a huge amount of surgery, and there hasn't been a huge amount over the last few years.
I was looking at their transfers, basically the last 3 or 4 seasons, they've barely even added starting 11 players. Mm. It has been a phenomenally settled squad. Perhaps that's not the best thing for them, but they've had their success and they're going to try and bring it back by returning to Zinedine Zidane. And that's the end of our breaking news segment. Do you want to go back to Arsenal Man United, or do you want to move on to the other big game on Sunday which attracted headlines?
Yeah, you read my mind. I think actually the biggest story of the weekend was in the Championship at St Andrews, where
the other interloper suddenly bursting into the scene. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you know what happened. Miguel's written on it this morning for us very well. There's lots of different questions. I guess the first question is like, oh yeah, we should say the fan himself has pled guilty to it today.
Yeah, he'll be sentenced this afternoon. What's it? Paul Mitchell, 27-year-old from a village in Worcestershire. Miguel's piece, if you've read it, is about kind of how it reflects the problems in society. And it kind of does. I kind of look at this and it's like, this guy used to be manager of a bar and now he's unemployed. And now he's going to have a criminal record and everyone knows his name as the guy who punched Jack Grealish. And he's probably not going to get a job after this because he'll have a criminal record and all that sort of stuff.
Have we seen Bielsa's quote?
Yeah.
This is actually...
kind of nails it, right?
Yeah. The person who does the thing we saw yesterday expresses a series of frustrations which are not necessarily linked to football, because the more satisfied you are with your personal life, the less you need to do this kind of act.
The thing about Bielsa is he's been one of the best people speaking on the problem with violence in Argentinian football, which, of course, you witnessed firsthand at the Copa Libertadores final. And no one listens to him in Argentina because they don't want to deal with the problem. Mm. But he's right. And, you know, it comes down to a lot of things. I think the societal stuff that you wrote about is spot on. And I think people will write about that in greater depth. For me, I think football for a lot of people is kind of a bit of a safe space, a bit of an escape, where certainly when I was in my late teens and I was doing a lot of away games, I remember you just get, you know, like you're drinking from like 8, 9 a.m. and then you're getting really drunk and you're shouting loads of abuse at players, basically. And you think that you're invisible because you're just one in a crowd and you can get away with it. I remember someone called me up for basically giving Danny Butterfield loads of stick. And he was like, you know, that's one of our players. And it's like, right, but he's playing rubbish. I want Klein in the team. And then...
What were you saying to him?
I can't even remember. It was general abuse. I think I definitely called him a number of swear words. And it's like, someone kind of called me out on it, and I was a little bit
lock your ideas up, Mr. Butterfield.
Yeah, you know, you're like a little bit like embarrassed and stuff. But I think that there are lots of people who, you know, football is an escape for many reasons. For many people, it's like a tradition. You just go with, you've always gone with your dad. Or for some people, it's a nostalgic thing. For some people, it's an escape from the mind, like Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, but you just go with your kid. You go, you enjoy it, you come home. And then there are people, I think, who do it because they just want an escape from what is modern life. And it's people like this. And it's like, you know, that is the societal aspect, is there are so many kind of issues that we're not dealing with now because we've got this like 2-year-long Brexit disaster, that there are things that just aren't being fixed in society. And I think part of it comes from that. Part of it comes from the fact that also the stewarding and policing was pretty pitiful at St Andrews. I don't understand how that happens. And we're looking at a game where, you know, there's always going to be trouble, Birmingham Villa. And the reaction was so poor. The response was so poor. The policeman waiting on the side to take the guy away, you know, we didn't see him for 45 seconds.
I mean, this kind of stuff, this has always been the case. Stewarding at football and policing has always been piss poor. And there's all, you know, a lot of these issues. And unless I've got a, you know, an erroneous reading of history here, this kind of thing is pretty much unprecedented. But
that's why I think it's unprecedented, but that almost creates it. So it's a new problem, mm-hmm. which almost requires a new solution now. And maybe it does emphasise what you've just touched on there, the fact that given the amount of money in football, the nature of stewarding, it seems half-arsed really, and cheap on the cheap.
Right. We've seen crowd invasions, yeah. But you know, a lone guy running onto the pitch to punch a player, I can't remember that being a very common occurrence in the
past. But what's the motivation if you're a steward, you're on a 0 hours contract or not even a contract at all, you're just a casual worker getting paid per shift, probably not very much money, why would you put your body on the line for anything?
Well, 150 stewards on you know, can't police 25,000 people. That's just numbers. The best check on human behaviour has always been other humans. The best check on feral fans has always been their peer group. And if you think about all the checks and balances that would are supposed to prevent an incident like this, you know, the disapproval of his fellow fans, or you know, even if it goes back to things like, you know, mental health spending.
Yeah.
The ties in society that create a kind of shared morality. Yeah. None of those seem to be in place anymore. They all seem to be breaking down in various various reasons and at varying paces.
Well, just in relation to the steward, I agree with that. But just in relation to the steward in point, first of all, Christopher Thomas Caddy responded to my piece on Twitter earlier and did say this: I used to work as a steward at Man City when at uni. No one took their job seriously. No one was going to take a punch for such little pay. I quit after a Manchester derby. Then when we, not the police, were put in between both sets of angry fans, and I was hit by a coin, which does kind of, I mean. Obviously, that's an extreme example, but it does touch on the issue of
stewarding.
It touches on the initial security issue. Then there's a wider issue of,
well, poor stewarding doesn't cause a guy.
Oh no,
to
no, of course, yeah, and that is, but in that sense, in terms of what we're saying about the ties, the binds, the the self-policing nature, it is why I actually think in this case, and this maybe feels a little bit draconian, but I think a points deduction isn't over the top, because I think a major problem with this is how he was so cheered as he went off. And like, to a lot of Birmingham fans, this lad's going to be a hero. And how is he not a hero if suddenly what he's done cost his team points? Because, I mean, the reaction from Birmingham fans about that prospect has been so OTT, to be honest.
As ever, it falls into, it's one of those areas where we can't look at it as being a solely individual thing. Like, he wouldn't have done that unless he felt that he was kind of representing the Birmingham fans as a whole. He wouldn't have done that if he thought he was going to face only opprobrium from the rest of the Birmingham fans. Like, it is obviously, I do think that Birmingham City as a collective have some responsibility in this instance. That's why I do think that a sporting deduction might be the right punishment for him.
Yeah, if it's not a points deduction, I think they should make him play behind closed doors for like a significant amount of games. Not, I don't want one or two, really. I think the punishment needs to be severe. I think, obviously, the Arsenal Man United one that happened shortly afterwards, so that guy's been charged as well with invading the pitch and common assault, I think it was. But, you know, I know the guy did not punch Chris Smalling. He just kind of, like, pushed past him. I think you should give Arsenal a decent whack for that as well, to be honest, because it's going to look very bad if you make Birmingham play 5 games behind closed doors and maybe lose 2 points and you do nothing to Arsenal for an incident which is only different basically by the force with which he touched the player. But he did touch the player. So at what point, you know, do you say, okay, well, Arsenal actually, they don't get anything. They get like a £4,000 fine and a slap on the wrist. But then Birmingham get 2 points taken off and 5 games behind closed doors. You know, I think it's a very difficult line to toe.
I don't think that's a bad course of action. I certainly, you know, wouldn't be against that. I think what that will also do is it'll turn him into a martyr. I mean, I think if Birmingham get banned from playing at St Andrews for the rest of the season and get a 6-point ban, Birmingham fans will not turn their ire on this guy. They'll turn their ire on the EFL and the authorities. That's just inevitable. That's in many ways just the corollary of this kind of toxic tribalism that we've got in football that has always been sort of bubbling under the surface, but now is really kind of finding, you know, really, you know, it's hitting a sort of nadir, or, you know, a nadir so far. I think there's a role for, you know, that toxic masculinity has to play in this. I mean, this guy is clearly doing it because he wants to impress his mates, and yeah, I mean, sorry.
No, do you see? There's been something made of the insignia on the back of his shirt.
Zulus.
Yeah.
They're the old Birmingham City firm from the sort of bad old days of hooliganism. There is an interesting issue here, which Johnny touched on, which is, to what extent is this a return to the dark ages? Like, people say that, you know, this is just like it was in the old days, but I would be interesting to read more about that, because I'm not sure that in the kind of bad old days you would get these kind of isolated incidents of fans running onto the pitch.
That's because there are fences. That's why.
Yeah,
you know, it's a different.
And one point that Jonathan Wilson made on exactly that today was that immediately after Hillsborough, he said there was like an unwritten rule amongst fans that you wouldn't run onto the pitch, because you knew that doing so would increase the chance of the fences coming back, which is the last thing you wanted. But that, you know, 30 years on after Hillsborough, that has kind of been forgotten now, and fans no longer feel that same sense that whatever happens, we mustn't allow fences to return. And that, as well as other things that Johnny was pointing to, have kind of like eroded the barrier between, like, not the physical barrier, but the kind of mental barrier between fans and players, between the stands and the pitch, which is what encourages people to go and do this kind of thing.
There's definitely that. Yeah, and I think for a lot of them, you know, someone said to me, like, imagine if some like Birmingham fan account had just tweeted on Saturday night, I'd love to punch Jack Grealish in the head. And like, how many people would have thought that was hilarious and funny and all that sort of stuff. And basically this guy...
1,000 retweets, 2,000
yeah,
likes.
Precisely. These people are acting out essentially what are like kind of football fan fantasies. And he's actually been stupid enough, brave enough, whatever, to act on it in the moment and has run on there and done it. And I think if that's the way we're going, then you've got to use the tribalism to turn this on its head. You've got to say, right, well, Birmingham are going to be deducted points. Birmingham are going to play games behind closed doors. And if you want to blame anyone, it's your man there, you know. And that is how you can encourage self-policing, I think, because if it's going to materially affect the team's chances of success or survival or whatever, it depends what the circumstances are, then that's the only way you can get to these people, in my opinion. Like, I don't know how else you dissuade these copycat incidents from happening. And, you know, how can you say, like, the Arsenal thing yesterday, how can you say that wasn't a copycat incident necessarily?
There is genuinely, I think, I remember reading this before, there's a psychological contagion to these things. So, and the fact it's been three and 4 days, I think, illustrates this, that when one happens, there's a copycat and it escalates. And clearly, which is why I think it's a new problem in that regard.
And another factor which is coming up more and more when you talk to people about this, and, you know, which we should say, we there is no evidence that this is the case here, but we can suspect so. Recreational drugs. In fact, I was speaking to a sort of senior football official earlier who said to me that it is, quote, the massive elephant in the room is the number of people who go to games and take a lot of cocaine. And it's very difficult to police because people are not getting properly searched on their way into games. It's very difficult to stop at the games themselves because, you need policemen in the toilets, in the cubicles to stop people from taking drugs. And more, you know, far more than alcohol, or rather in combination with alcohol, it prompts people to go and do crazy stuff like this, like running on the pitch. And wherever it happens, if it's England, Scotland or wherever, when you see somebody running onto the pitch in the middle of the day, you know, this is a midday kickoff, to swing a punch at someone, you have to suspect that drugs as well as alcohol are involved.
Yeah, I mean, and which again is a wider societal problem.
Totally.
And, you know, like when every time there's kind of a mass shooting, I'm obviously not equating this to a mass shoot, but every time there's a mass shooting, psychologists and sociologists come on the news and talk about the media and how these events are portrayed, and how there is in many ways there's a real attraction to notoriety in a way that maybe wasn't the case in the past. And this I think comes from so many different sources. Like we talk about, you know, the social fabric, you know, trade union membership is down, you know, organized religion is on the decline, the political class is totally diseased, all the traditional founts of I guess a kind of objective morality have sort of broken down. And so when any act can essentially is justifiable on a subjective basis, then you're going to get stuff like this happening, because notoriety is really just a kind of subjective notion, and morality is you know, just a, you know, that's a subjective notion, and kind of notoriety is a form of leadership in a way.
Yeah. Anybody gets to be infamous for 15 minutes.
But also, what's the, you know, what are the rewards of these things? The rewards of these things are that, you know, people, you get it every summer when Love Island's on, for example. It's like, oh, more people apply to be on Love Island than apply to go to Cambridge or Oxford or whatever. It's like, yeah, brilliant. Okay, stupid comparison, because, you know, it's all different age groups compared to one particular age group and all that sort of stuff, and it's a different amount of people you'd expect to go for that. But we're also currently in the thing, you know, this is just a byproduct of the exact age we're living in right now, where if you are famous for some reason and you can amass like a 100,000 followers on Instagram, whatever, you can basically lock yourself in for at least £100,000 a year in terms of earnings. Because
what are you on, Mix?
He's got nothing on Instagram, has he?
Instagram's more. I can still basically put up photos of me getting drunk on Instagram because I don't have that many followers on it.
Okay, so we won't say what the username is, but you know, so like my other half works in influencer marketing and stuff like that, and you know, they got people who are getting paid £20,000 a post to put stuff on Instagram and all these sorts of things. And it is true that fame / notoriety / people just knowing you, who you are, is more valuable now than it's almost ever been. And I was doing an event recently with Paul Merson, and he's kind of that era where it was just before the footballers got really rich, and those guys are still. Merce turns up in a cab, like a mini cab on his own, turns up at the door, they ask if he's got a ticket, like no one recognizes him, all that sort of stuff. He's just a very kind of normal bloke. And then a week later, I did the same thing with Robbie Savage, who's obviously worth millions and played in the right era, just about the end of his career. He must have been earning, I guess, £50,000 a week, probably more. Blackburn, Birmingham, that sort of thing. So I think he was just in the right era, and people like Merson were just in the wrong era. If you played in the Premier League now, surely you're going to have enough followers that even if you retire tomorrow, you're going to make money. And it's the same with, like, if you are on TOWIE, if you are on Made in Chelsea, if you are on these shows, as soon as you're on, as soon as you amass that following, money will follow. And if, I mean, I don't think this guy is going to make the most of it, but fame is now a prize almost that you can tangibly cash in on better than ever before if you're just a normal person, I think. And that kind of contributes to some weird behaviour.
Given some of it's connected to social media, and I mean, the other side of it, maybe a more basic side, is that some of this as well is the kind of the nature of online debate spilling into the tangible, into the real world, basically. It's, you know, it's all like the extreme tribalism you now see with any discussion of football online. It's got almost a physical manifestation of that.
From extreme tribalism, shall we move on to Liverpool? In the Champions League week. Where is everybody?
Well, actually, someone asked you,
go on.
Just related to this. Someone asked me yesterday, if Birmingham are going to get docked points, then what do you think should have happened to Liverpool for the bus attack last year? Or the bus vandalism at Man City.
Should have got them a new bus. New bus, I would say. That's the fair punishment.
Yep.
There's been a lot of revisionism on that. It was Man City's fault for taking a different route, or it was only one bottle of Copperberg or whatever. You know, I think that was a pretty poor reflection on Liverpool. I think it's just because it was... There's been nothing since or before that, so you can put it down to being an isolated incident.
Bus diesel can't melt steel beams.
Yes, and there's no conspiracy behind it. But we should talk Champions League, Johnny. You are correct. And tomorrow is Juve Atletico, which you're going to be at.
Yes.
What game that'll be?
It should be great. I mean, Juventus 2-0 down from the first leg. Really, I mean, played pretty badly, I think. And yet, you know, they're still in it. They have.
Are they in it?
I think they're in it. You know, they get an early goal. They're really pinning their hopes on Ronaldo. I mean, a lot of the Turin media, a lot of the Italian media, has been sort of playing up the chance of Ronaldo sort of making a real decisive performance in this game. And at a time when his output in the Champions League has probably never been less prolific, I think it's something like one goal in his last nine Champions League games. And now it's really kind of, you know, he's having a lot of hopes invested in him. So it's going to be a pretty interesting game for those reasons.
Jack Pitt-Brook, I believe you're going to be writing about Man City Schalke. I think that one's done and dusted, but what about you?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if City screwed it up. I was in Gelsenkirchen for the first leg where City didn't really deserve to win but still won 3-2. I think City are kind of, we saw this against Watford on Saturday, they're at a level of sustained high performance now that makes me, which would make it a massive surprise if they were to screw it up.
So you think Schalke
are also not very good. We can't forget that.
If you had to put a percentage chance on a quadruple right now, what would you put it at?
Well, the other day I saw that it was 10-1, and I thought 10-1 actually seems a bit short. But then maybe, I don't know, I'd say like mid-single figures, high single figures of percentage.
They've already completed the quadruple of investigations, haven't they?
Between 5, I'd say, yeah, between like, let's say 7%.
It's probably right, because ultimately, to complete, when you really think about it, a quadruple, like a feat of such power, and it's so fragile though, because all it just takes is one game to go, right, one bad game, one bad bounce, and that's it.
We give them like a 67% chance of winning the league, right? Maybe more better than 50%.
60, I'd
better
say,
than
yeah.
50% chance of winning the FA Cup, or maybe 50%.
I think
chance of winning the FA Cup.
Yeah,
and then maybe a 1 in 5, 1 in 6 chance of winning the Champions League. That is about 1 in 16, 17, isn't it? That's about 5-6%.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, Miguel, Liverpool-Bayern is the big one for you this week. Wednesday, is that? Yeah. In Munich. Bayern, like Barca, Real Madrid, and many of the great European clubs, have terrific songs that they play about the club. FC Bayern, Stehende Suden is our favourite.
Yeah.
How do you see that going? Oh, we've only got about 2 minutes left before we need to go, but talk to us about Bayern Liverpool.
Well, I think it's quite an interesting one, in that it's a very rare these days match that comes in from nil all from the first leg. In fact, it's one of only four in the last 4 years of knockout football in Champions League. And one of those last year was by Mourinho. The other one was this year with Barcelona and Lyon. And I think it's interesting. I mean, it's something I've been thinking a lot, actually, the last two Champions League seasons, because it's been so chaotic. But the old caginess that used to be, that kind of really kind of tight tactical awareness, seems to kind of disappeared from European football in that way, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this game responds in that sense, and whether it be as chaotic, I suppose, as some of the football we saw last week.
Barca Lyon, I'm hoping that Barca get through, but Lyon have got a good young team as well. If they do, who do you fancy from Liverpool Bayern? You think Liverpool got the edge, or
that's really 50-50 that tie? I think
I couldn't split.
I might just go Liverpool, just because I almost fancy them to get an away goal and spook Bayern a bit. And Bayern started that game well, but gradually receded, and they're still a bit off, even though they've roped in a collapsing Dortmund.
My take watching that in the pub was that the longer it went on, the more likely it was that Liverpool would win it on away goals in the second leg. Mm. Because, you know, it's obviously easier for them because any score draw sends them through. However, I wonder whether their declining league form means that they might chuck it on Wednesday.
Like, no, they won't chuck it, surely.
Just because they need to save their title push, and having two extra games, if not four or even five extra games, after the international break would make that probably less likely rather than more likely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Liverpool were probably 51-49 favourites, but I think it's incredibly tight, that one. And like you say, it's the away goal is the only thing that makes me think that they're slightly on top. Either way, it should be thrilling stuff. Thank you, gents, for joining me. I'm going to be away for the next 2 weeks, unfortunately, because I have two weddings to attend in America. So the guys will take care of all our dear listeners in the meantime.
You're away next week as well, aren't you? Miguel's away next week.
And Jack's got a trip coming up.
I'm away the following week.
You'll be listening to a 55-minute monologue from me at some point.
We'll make it happen. We'll get Lukey in here to do some more shilling for Jose Mourinho or whatever. And until then, any other business that people would like to raise before we go? No, I think that's it. All we need to do is remember to read and subscribe independent.co.uk/football. The podcast, obviously, is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, every kind of podcatcher that everybody likes to listen to.
Are we plugging beer again this week, or is that?
Yeah, but I think it's like an automated thing. I'll explain it off air, but it's like there's some sort of technical stuff I had to do.
Okay.
But I believe
whichever beer we're plugging, buy it.
beer53.com/indie I think was the address. And if not, then we'll see you next week when Johnny will correct it. Thank you to Jack. Thank you to Miguel. Thank you to Johnny. Thank you to everyone who is working for us this week on the Champions League. It should be a thrilling week. Make sure you stay tuned and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.